Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Trump care is dead, and Obamacare lives, at least for now. We'll tell you what's behind the schism in the Republican Party that led Speaker Ryan to kill the bill on today's show. Next up, learn the surprising facts about high levels of lead being found in children in many California communities, and how a service dog led to discovering contaminated water at a school right here in San Diego. From Public News Service, hear how water infrastructure projects in California are being underfunded by the federal government. On our financial report, learn what the recent interest rate hike could mean for your mortgage and credit card payments. On Tribal Beat, learn how one local tribe is giving back to help with firefighting in our region. Then, learn how California's Superintendent of Public Education is challenging an executive order of President Donald Trump's that would take away funding for sanctuary schools. Now, if you love taking photos, be sure to stay tuned for details about our very own East County Photo Contest and how you can enter your best shots. Then on Green Scene, get details on a sewage spill of nearly 1 million gallons that's polluted a waterway in a popular local hiking area. On our Capitol Report, learn how cuts in Donald Trump's proposed budget could hurt medical research, including some right here in San Diego. On Jobs Talk, we'll tell you about Assemblyman Randy Vopel's bill to encourage hiring of recent veterans. Also learn about a proposed bill that would ban marriages by minors in California. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Dr. Fred Bauman. He's a retired neurologist from El Cajon who is speaking out to warn about a shocking number of U.S. soldiers and veterans who are dying in their sleep, the medications that he believes are responsible, and why the government may be covering up these deaths while pharmaceutical industries profit. And finally, hear about a proposed bill in Congress that would let employers require workers to get DNA tests or face huge fines if they refuse. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Republican health care bill, called the American Health Care Act and unofficially dubbed Trump Care by its critics, was pulled from the House floor on Friday. President Donald Trump had demanded an up or down vote, but instead, Speaker Paul Ryan pulled the measure without a vote because he could not get enough support for passage. The most recent national poll found that only 17% of the American public supported the Trump Care bill, showing an erosion of support even among Trump's base. After the vote was canceled, Trump announced that Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act, will remain in place for now and that it's time to move on to other priorities such as tax and trade reforms. Trump, absurdly, blamed Democrats for the inability of House members to repeal Obamacare and implement a replacement as Trump promised during his campaign. But the truth is that Republicans have a House majority by a margin of 241 Republicans and only 185 Democrats. Republicans also control the Senate and the presidency, so they could have passed their own measure without a single Democratic vote. The real reason Trump Care failed wasn't because of the unanimous opposition by Democrats. It's because it was a deeply flawed bill that showed up deep divisions with the Republican Party. The bill was opposed by some moderate Republicans concerned about jacking up rates for senior citizens and slashing Medicare for the poor. Many members had faced angry crowds at town hall meetings in their districts on the Republicans' proposed health care plan, which the Congressional Budget Office found would result in 24 million people losing health care and skyrocketing rates for seniors, as well as cuts for the disabled and many others. The Republicans' bill was also opposed by hardcore right-wing extremists in the Freedom Caucus, who thought the bill didn't go far enough in reducing the deficit. They wanted to strip health care coverage right away from pregnant women and babies and sought to gut Medicare, among other changes that they sought. After the bill was pulled for lack of Republican support, Trump predicted that Obamacare will eventually implode. But now he's taking active steps to actually make that happen. He's ordered that ads informing people how to sign up for Obamacare, such as under state exchanges, stop airing. He's also told the IRS to stop enforcing laws that impose penalties on people who don't buy insurance, essentially knocking the financial footing out from under the Affordable Care Act. That sets the stage for the worst of all scenarios, weakening the availability and raising cost of policies under Obamacare without offering a single improvement or replacement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Last week, lead contamination was discovered at a school in the San Diego Unified School District. Testing was done after a service dog refused to drink the water and a film was noticed on the water's surface. Now, San Diego Unified School District has announced that it will test all local schools' water systems. But that's just the tip of a very big iceberg, it turns out. An investigation just published by Reuters News Service reveals that children in 29 California communities have lead poisoning levels as high or, in some cases, higher than Flint, Michigan. Reuters obtained the records from the California Department of Public Health. One neighborhood in Fresno had 14% of children test positive for lead levels above federal safety standards. By contrast, only 5% of the children in Flint, Michigan were above that threshold set by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. Statewide, in California, the testing was done in 2012, and it found that 2% of all California children had rates at or above the federal safety standard. Other communities with high lead levels include some older neighborhoods in Los Angeles and the East Bay area near San Francisco. There is no safe level for lead, although very high levels can cause harm to children's nervous system, organ damage, permanent learning disabilities, and behavior issues. The statewide study did not look at all children, only those under age 6 and considered at risk for lead exposure, such as those living in older homes, and children on Medicaid, typically in poor households. Testing all children could show even more have been harmed, since even children in newer homes could be ingesting lead-tainted water if they attend an older school with lead water pipes. Besides water, lead poisoning can be caused by ingesting lead-based paint, contaminated soils, or other sources, such as leaded fuels. A bill recently introduced by Assemblyman Bill Quirk, a scientist who chairs the Assembly Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials Committee, would require all children in California to be tested for lead. The bill would help identify where there are lead exposure clusters and assure that children who have been exposed to high lead levels will receive access to health care services for lead exposure. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The U.S. is drastically underfunding water projects, putting communities at risk for a catastrophic failure, according to a new report from the U.S. Water Alliance. Advocates for better water infrastructure are flooding Washington, D.C., so to speak, for Water Week 2017. The report found that the U.S. is only funding one-third of water infrastructure needs, and our drinking and wastewater systems recently earned a D grade from the American Society of Civil Engineers. Radhika Fox, director of the U.S. Water Alliance, says the proper investment would be a boon to the economy.
If we were to close that investment gap, we would drive economic growth in this country. The report found that closing that infrastructure gap would create over 1.3 million jobs.
The report notes that 40 years ago, 60% of our water projects were funded by federal dollars. Now that figure is just 9%, with most of the money coming from local levies. Fox says she's optimistic that Congress will fund more water projects this year, as both parties have voiced support for a major infrastructure bill. Fox notes that even though the Golden State has gotten some much-needed rain, conservation projects remain essential.
The investments that California is trying to make around reuse and having that broadly utilized across the state is really helping to stretch our very limited water supplies.
The U.S. has seen multiple major water disasters in recent years, in Flint, Michigan, in Toledo, Ohio, and in the Florida Everglades. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Jonathan Getz with an economic outlook. The Federal Reserve has raised interest rates by a quarter of a point, the second increase in 3 months. But rates are still at a historic low range of 0.75 to 1%. The hike means consumers will pay more for credit cards and home equity lines of credit and adjustable rate mortgages. But new fixed rate mortgages and car loans are not expected to be affected by a full quarter point, since many already calculated the long anticipated increase. People will also earn slightly more on savings accounts. The Feds justify the raise based on positive economic signs, including a stronger job market and increased consumer confidence. The Fed's forecast projects a total of 3 rate hikes this year, with the next increase not expected until summer. They project growth of 2.1% this year, still under the 4% that President Donald Trump has predicted his administration's policies will attain.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
Fighting fires in the East County just got a little easier thanks to the Jamul Indian Village Tribe. Last week, the tribe handed over keys to 2 new fire trucks for the San Diego County Fire Authority, $1 million ladder truck and a $500,000 pumper truck. The vehicles donated are part of a multi-$1 million fire and life services agreement between the County of San Diego and the tribe, which operates the new Hollywood Casino in Jamul that opened for business in 2016. Governor Jerry Brown's tribal advisor, Judge Cynthia Gomez, was on hand at the ceremony held at the new casino, along with representatives from local elected officials and Jamul Indian Village tribal chairman, Kenneth Meza. The new fire trucks will provide much-needed help fighting fires in a year when record rainfall has led to heavy vegetation growth that puts our region at risk of a serious wildfire season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter. This is Gene Carpenter with an education report. California State Superintendent Tom Torlakson filed a legal brief Wednesday in the Ninth Circuit Federal Court supporting Santa Clara County's request for a preliminary injunction to halt President Donald Trump's executive order on deportations. Trump's order aims to deport many undocumented immigrants, but also threatens to stop federal funding for California cities, counties, and public schools if they declare themselves sanctuary jurisdictions. The injunction request claims the order is unconstitutional because it would compel local governments and schools to take an active role in enforcing immigration law. Torlakson last year urged California school districts to declare themselves safe havens and reminded parents that state and federal laws guarantee that students can attend public school, regardless of immigration status. To date, 57 separate school district boards representing nearly 2 million students have adopted such resolutions. In the court brief, Torlakson stated, "The executive order places schools, school districts, and county offices of education who have merely identified themselves as safe havens for undocumented students in the precarious position of losing large amounts of federal funds without warning, notice, or clear guidance about what is meant by the order." California receives more than $8 billion annually in federal funds for kindergarten through 12th grade education. Federal funding ranges from help for students in disadvantaged communities to free and reduced-cost school breakfast and lunches for students from low-income families. U.S. District Judge William Orrick is scheduled to hold a hearing April 5th on the motion to halt Trump's order.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine. We're hosting a photography contest, and we want to see your best images taken in San Diego's East County. The contest is co-sponsored with Assemblyman Randy Bopel, who represents East County. The winning photographs will be displayed in East County Magazine and in the state capitol in Sacramento. Categories that you can enter include wildlife, landscapes, cities and towns, activities, and people. All entries must be received by April 30th at 5 p.m. to be eligible. Each photo must be submitted in JPEG or GIF format and must be 4 megabytes or smaller in size. All photographers grant a non-exclusive right for East County Magazine to publish the winning photo on our site, in our archive and newsletter, and for Assemblyman Vopel to display the winning photos at his Capitol office and in his newsletter. If your photo shows a recognizable image of a person, then you must also include a model release. You can submit your photos along with your name, the title of the photo, and your address and phone to editor@eastcountymagazine.org and cc georgie.ryan@asm.ca.gov. You can find all of these rules at eastcountymagazine.org and just click on our Best of East County section for details. And please send us your best shots.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fisteer with a Green Scene Report. Nearly 1 million gallons of raw sewage has spilled into Los Coches Creek. The county discovered the leak on Friday, March 17th, near East Sierra Alta Way in unincorporated El Cajon during a routine inspection. But the damaged underground sewer pipe is believed to have been damaged and exposed during storms on February 27th. The spill was contained by 1 p.m. the day it was found. However, Los Coches Creek was closed to public access pending testing of water samples collected to protect the public health.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
President Donald Trump's budget proposes to slash 20% of funding to the National Institute of Health. California received $3.69 billion in NIH grants for the last fiscal year, so such deep cuts could put key research projects at risk. Medical research leaders nationally and locally warn that the cuts will eliminate many California jobs and threaten research to find new treatments and cures for medical conditions. Benjamin Korb, Public Affairs Director of the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, issued a statement which reads, "A $6 billion cut is unacceptable to the scientific community and should be unacceptable to the American public as well." He adds, "President Donald Trump's fiscal year 2018 spending plan erases years worth of bipartisan support for the NIH and the American Biomedical Research Enterprise, which has long been the global leader for biomedical innovation. Cuts this deep threaten America's ability to remain a leader," Korb says. And he concludes, "It is of grave concern to the research community that President Trump's budget proposal, which could fund the agency at a 15-year low, values investments in defense above all other federal expenditures." Science Insider reports that NIH had a $32 billion budget last year and was slated to receive a $1 to $2 billion boost for this year before Trump took office. Bitkom, the leading trade association for California's life sciences industry, also slammed Trump's proposed massive cuts in medical research funding. Joe Panetta, president and CEO of Biocom, says that a massive cut would be disastrous to the ability of research institutions, academic campuses, and small companies throughout California to continue to be a primary driver of the state's economy. The cuts would affect jobs throughout the state, stymie medical innovation, and delay the development of new treatments and cures. Times of San Diego reports that Biocom will work to lobby California's 55 congressional delegates to urge support for a robust NIH budget to allow the life science community to continue fulfilling its promise of bringing life-saving products to market. House Speaker Paul Ryan has indicated that he expects medical research to be among the items that may be changed as Congress begins budget deliberations. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with Jobs Talk on the East County Magazine Show. The California Assembly Committee on Veterans Affairs has voted unanimously to support Assembly Bill 353. That's the Veterans Employment Parity Act authored by East County Assemblyman Randy Vopel. Assemblyman Vopel says this is an important step toward expanding job opportunities for our nation's veterans. He adds, with a higher unemployment rate than the national average, it's critical that we provide private employers with the option to give preference to veterans during the hiring process. AB 353 would allow private sector employers to establish a voluntary hiring preference policy for veterans. Today's law only allows for employers to give preference to Vietnam-era veterans when it comes to hiring. This bill would expand the law to include all veterans, regardless of when they served. It ensures that if they desire, employers can give preference to veterans who have served more recently, including veterans of Iraq, Afghanistan, and other conflicts. To date, 37 states have enacted similar legislation. In addition, under current law, a veterans preference policy is already allowed for public sector positions.
Should minors be prohibited from getting married? A bill introduced in the state capitol would ban anyone under 18 from marrying, with no exceptions. California is currently tied with Tennessee for the sixth highest rate of marriages by minors in the nation, even though the state already has laws in place to prevent would-be Romeo and Juliet couples from saying, "I do," without their parents' permission. Currently, if you're under 18 and want to wed in California, you must get approval from a parent or legal guardian, undergo an interview with a family court services counselor, bring a birth certification or other identification, and get a court order issued by a judge. Requirements for having a parent present may be waived if the parent has abandoned the family, lives overseas, or is no longer living, but a judge's ruling is still mandated. But now, Senator Jerry Hill, a Democrat from San Mateo, wants to make California the first state in the nation to ban all marriages by minors. He says he introduced the measure after a constituent told him about a 12-year-old girl who was engaged to be married. Under current law, that's legal provided she gets a parent or guardian and a judge to agree. In California, as many as 1,000 marriages each year have a bride or groom aged 15 to 17 years old. Underage marriages can occur out of true love, but can be the result of arranged marriages or urgency due to a baby on the way or a partner in the military being sent overseas. Arranged marriages are allowed under several religions, including Islam, Hindu, Haredi, Judaism, and certain Christian sects. Some pair up children with future spouses from a very early age. But Senator Hill calls arranged child marriages immoral and notes that marriages among teenagers also have high rates of divorce. His bill would raise the age of consent to 18, the same as for military service. Many states have minimum ages of consent to marry without permission, often 16 or 17. Nebraska has set the consent age at 18 and Mississippi at 21. However, all states allow exceptions in certain cases with parental permission, particularly if the couple is expecting a baby or has already had a child. Such allowances may turn a blind eye to statutory rape laws. In California, it's a crime for anyone over 18 to have sex with someone under 18. California currently has the highest teen birth rate in the nation, and 75% of babies born to high school girls were fathered by men 18 or older. But courts and families often view it more desirable to have a father take responsibility for a child than to send an adult father of a teenage mother's child to jail. In California, you must be 16 to get a driver's license and 21 to drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes, though there is no minimum age of consent to terminate a pregnancy. Does it make sense to ban a 17-year-old girl from marrying when she can legally get an abortion? Early marriages can cause trauma for some young participants, particularly if the marriage is coerced. On the other hand, some young couples defy the odds, wedding early, and remaining happily married for the rest of their lives. Efforts to raise California's marriage age, with no exceptions, puts the well-being of willing minors, religious freedom, and concerns for children born out of wedlock against the state's concern over protecting minors from shotgun weddings against their will, as well as against potentially immature judgment in choosing whom and when to marry. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Dr. Fred Bauman. He's a retired neurologist from El Cajon. He also has a science background. He's been published in medical journals for helping to discover certain medical conditions, and now he's been researching the impact of powerful psychiatric drugs on U.S. soldiers and veterans, and he believes that this mixture of powerful psychiatric medications is killing thousands of American soldiers and veterans. Dr. Bauman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Miriam. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're glad to have you here. It's such an important issue with so many veterans here in San Diego County, particularly. Now, I understand that this issue first came to your attention after the Charleston Gazette, back in 2008, published a story titled, "Vets Taking Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Drugs Die in Sleep." And that focused on four veterans, all young men in their 20s, all diagnosed with PTSD, all of whom died in their sleep after being prescribed a combination of Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic, Paxil, an antidepressant, and another drug called Clonopin, which is benzodiazepine. And they all seemed normal when they went to sleep, according to their family members. Now, what prompted you, Dr. Bauman, after reading about this, to open and finance your own investigation into these and other unexplained deaths among our military service people and veterans?
Well, I pondered that headline, which said so much. Here were four young men from the same geographic area, all labeled PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, all on the same psychotropic medications, all four of them dying in their sleep.
Yeah.
I come back to their youth, all in their 20s.
Right, where you wouldn't expect it to be a heart failure or something.
You don't expect young people in their 20s to just suddenly die. So I pondered that for days and finally came to the conclusion that these deaths had to have the same basis and had to be due to the same things, be of the same mechanism. So I wrote a press release and put that press release out. It was entitled "A Cluster of Deaths in Young People on Psychotropic Drug," and I emphasized the sameness of the drugs that they were on. And,
yeah. Now, you have since then, you've spent years researching this, Googling this, and you've found a lot more cases, I understand. How many of these sudden cardiac deaths among soldiers and veterans who were found dead in their barracks or their beds at home have you found?
Well, a young woman, a veteran's wife, began to Google soldiers found dead in bed, found dead in barracks, found dead in sleep, and very short order, she had 27 such deaths that she had been able to find online, and all of them amongst young soldiers, both women and men.
Very disturbing.
And I took to Googling just as this young woman kind of led the way, and we kept finding more and more, and a year ago we were at 430 some odd, and presently, without spending a lot of time at this search, online search, I now have over 500 such total.
Over 500.
Over 500.
And I take you've ruled out other likely causes, such as maybe other underlying health causes or injuries that could have caused this?
I'm saying that my diagnosis is that these are sudden deaths.
Yeah.
And about the only thing that causes sudden death in young people would be heart death.
Failure. And that's a lot of heart failures.
Yes.
And were all of them taking these psychotic drugs or these psychiatric, some combination of psychiatric drugs?
And yes, and Miriam, the only drug in the picture here that carries much of a special risk for a sudden interruption of heart rhythm is the antipsychotic, in this case, the main antipsychotic used in the military. Well, there were two. There was Seroquel and Risperdal were the main ones being used. Mm-hmm. But they have a particular propensity to cause the heart trace, the QRS complex, to become wider and wider, slower and slower.
So basically it slows the heart rate down until someone just dies?
And what happens is then the heart trace or the heart rhythm becomes an arrhythmia. It becomes chaotic, and pretty soon the heart no longer pumps blood or no longer pumps blood effectively, and the next thing that happens is the individual passes out because no blood is going to the brain. And beyond that, the heart goes into a rhythm that is so chaotic that no blood is pumped anymore.
Wow.
And the individual dies within minutes or within a day.
Very frightening.
That's the definition of a sudden cardiac death.
Yeah. Now, here's another shocking statistic. You have published that from 2001 to the present day, the U.S. Central Command has given deploying troops a 180-day supply of prescription psychotropic drugs, including antipsychotics. And obviously not all of these deploying troops even have a PTSD diagnosis. What is the reason that the military gives for prescribing so much of this medication to our soldiers?
I urge people to think, if they will, about the epidemic of so-called ADHD.
In children, attention deficit disorder.
In school children, by and large, of high school or of kindergarten age all the way up through high school, and nowadays it's being said to be present in preschoolers and in babies and in adults. There's no one that can't have it. And I, in 2006, published a book called The ADHD Fraud. ADHD is not an actual disease. It's an invention by psychiatry being paid by the pharmaceutical industry to invent phony diseases in order to produce phony epidemics, in order to prescribe drugs.
Yeah, you know, my own daughter, when she was about 6 or 7 years old, we had a teacher trying to tell us that she had ADHD and that we should get her on Ritalin. And instead, she happened to be a talented ice skater. She started going to the skating rink every morning before school, and the problem went away. This was just an active kid that needed an outlet for that activity.
Exactly.
Now, while some might dispute whether ADHD is a real disorder or not, I think many would agree that the drugs for it are certainly overprescribed, and that drugging children, soldiers, or anybody else should be a last resort, not a first. These drugs should not be handed out like candy because they do have harmful effects. So are you suggesting then that the pharmaceutical industry could be behind why these troops are being prescribed so many drugs and that they may not even be necessary?
I'm suggesting exactly that. There is no risk factor in the picture. No risk factor for such a catastrophic interruption of heart rhythm other than the drugs that they're on.
But I want to go back to my question for a minute. I understand that after somebody's been to combat and they come back with what we used to call being shell-shocked from combat, having flashbacks and so forth, it's now called PTSD. I guess it's debatable whether that's a real diagnosis or not, as you contend. But when they're first sent out,
not debatable.
Okay, when they're first sent over and deployed, though, some of them haven't even had such a diagnosis. So why are they being loaded up on all of these pills? Is it as a sleep aid or what?
Yes, there and lots of the victims, lots of those being called PTSD and being called traumatic brain injury, have never been off of U.S. soil. They've never been in a battle setting. The military psychiatrists just have no explanation for those.
Are any of the troops, I want to clarify something, are these drugs being given to any troops who have never been diagnosed with a psychiatric issue, just ordinary healthy troops being deployed?
Yes, I mean, the soldiers get these diagnoses are handed out willy-nilly. A lot of times there's almost nothing in the medical chart that speaks to the possibility that they might have a significant mental or psychological disorder.
So when you have stated that the deploying troops are being given a 180-day supply of these psychotropic drugs, is that all troops are only those where somebody made a diagnosis of an issue?
One would have to have access to the charts, and the record keeping is strangely lacking when it comes to who actually has these diagnoses and who actually gets the drugs and how much of the drugs do they get.
Now, have you done records requests to try to get your hands on some of that information?
I have tried to get informed consent documents for people with psychiatric diagnoses such as ADHD. Mm-hmm. I have written to any number of senators.
What efforts have you made to bring this serious threat to the attention of authorities, either in the military or in the federal government, such as our elected officials?
Well, I've written to the Armed Services Committee, to the Veterans Affairs Committee. I've written to Dianne Feinstein, our senator. I've written to Senator Cardin of these are all people who've been on these on these committees having to do with military things.
So
and a striking thing about my attempts to gain information of this sort is that I've had no answers whatsoever from any of them. It's as though there's a blanket cover-up going on. I FedExed Dianne Feinstein a letter telling her just what I've been telling you and asking for, you know, why are these drugs still being given when we've got all these deaths and when there is no proof that PTSD or the other diagnosis for which these things are given is so-called traumatic brain injury, TBI, and no science behind either of those diagnoses.
I know you've told me that with PTSD, for example, that brain scans don't show any evidence of a physical change, that
show
it's
nothing.
Really a psychological. So that sort of begs the devil's advocate question here of if you could wave your magic wand and none of these drugs were prescribed anymore for conditions such as PTSD or attention deficit disorder, how would you treat the very troubling symptoms of those ailments that so many of these, we're talking about troops and veterans today, have, as well as, I suppose, anyone else?
If there is not a medical disease, a physical abnormality, then there's no rationale to give drugs, which the drugs are a physical treatment. They invariably alter the body's chemistry, the brain's chemistry. So there would be a place for talk therapy, psychological therapy in individuals who are having lingering mental, psychological, behavioral problems, but not medical treatment and not surgical treatment.
Yeah.
And yet many people with psychological diagnoses get psychosurgery, get their brain cut on.
What about those who actually have had what we call traumatic brain injury, where there was a physical injury, a bomb blew up or something like that?
When neurologists and neurosurgeons use the term traumatic brain injury, there has got to be some physical abnormality present on neurologic examination or on brain scans showing that there's been some bleeding.
Right, and those are things that you can see and you can measure and document.
But if there has been no evidence whatsoever of a physical injury, if the individual was not rendered unconscious, not rendered confused and disoriented, had a blow to the head, but they seemed to be entirely normal, then there's no there's no place for appending a medical label, a disease label.
Back to this heavy use of the psychiatric drugs and the belief that it's linked to these sudden deaths, sudden cardiac deaths of young soldiers and veterans. Are we seeing, I believe there's been some write-ups in other medical journals that confirm the same theory or belief. Can you tell us a little bit about who else besides yourself is drawing attention to this issue?
It is truly astounding, but the fact of the matter is that, I mean, these individuals are cared for by military doctors of all kinds, and they don't just see psychiatrists who have their own phony diagnostic manual, the DSM 4 and 5 and so on, but they also at times see neurologists like myself, in internal medicine doctors, GPs, pediatricians, who knows. And the only conclusion I can draw is that the fix is on that these people are not allowed to say anything other than to parrot the lie that goes behind mm-hmm. PTSD, the lie that goes with traumatic brain injury.
Are we seeing?
I have no doubt. I mean, and the pathologists, the people who do the autopsies, in a sudden cardiac death due to a drug such as an antipsychotic, you're just not going to see anything whatsoever wrong with the heart.
So when they do these autopsies, what are they listing as the cause of death on these young men that were drugged up and then suddenly dropped dead in their sleep?
The autopsy conclusions, those drawn by the pathologist doing the autopsy, are that these are drug intoxications.
So we have medical examiners then that are confirming that drugs were responsible for these deaths and yet the military's ignoring
it. They are saying that these are drug intoxications, which is different than saying these are sudden cardiac deaths. They say that these are drug intoxications in which the sum total of all of the drugs taken causes the individual to be sleepy, mm-hmm. lethargic, and eventually to go into a coma.
But in either case, the drugs are responsible, whether we call it cardiac
yes.
arrest
yes.
or whether we just say it's the combination
yeah.
of drugs. If anything, maybe that's even more clear that the cardiac arrest wasn't caused by something else,
right.
it was caused by the drugs.
But when they say this is a drug intoxication, they're saying all of the drugs have an additive effect
mm-hmm.
to diminish the state of awakeness and then to depress respirations and eventually respirations stop
yeah.
and then the heart stops. But this is different than saying this is a sudden cardiac death with a primary cause, the antipsychotics. It's not uncommon to find soldiers like there's in the list I have, there's a Robert Nickel. He was mm-hmm. on about 13 or 14 different drugs.
Wow.
And it's the antipsychotics of all of the drugs that carry most of the risk of causing the sudden heart stoppage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an additive
yeah.
Depressant effect of all of the drugs. It's primarily the antipsychotics. And there's so much money putting the antipsychotics out there to be consumed, in this case, by soldiers.
Yeah.
The other place that you commonly see unexplained deaths, unexplained sudden deaths, are in psychiatric hospitals.
Where almost all of the psychiatric patients are on combinations of psychiatric drugs.
All of the participating physicians, sadly, are covering up the probable sudden cardiac deaths.
Now, are there medical journals where we've been had peer-reviewed medical journals linking this particular psychiatric drug that you're concerned about to sudden cardiac death? Is that an established fact in the medical journals?
That has been established since the mid-90s. It's been apparent mm-hmm. that antipsychotics are causing sudden cardiac deaths.
And they know that because this has happened in some people that maybe weren't on these huge drug cocktails.
I think it first became apparent in the elderly, in institutions for the elderly, hospitals for the elderly. This is when the inordinate number of deaths, sudden deaths, became apparent. And the manufacturers of antipsychotics spend lots of money to try to cover up the fact that there are these risks.
So is anybody, anywhere, taking this risk to our own troops and veterans seriously and speaking out and trying to do anything about it?
It's being covered up. There was an article, I would say 8 or 10 years ago, in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution by a journalist, I think his name is Andy Miller. And the article spoke of the hundreds of people dying in the state psychiatric institutes. And he spoke, Miller spoke of the coroners, the pathologists, participating in a cover-up of what's causing these.
Okay, so he spoke out about the cover-up of these deaths in the psychiatric hospitals, and you're speaking about a cover-up that you believe is occurring with the military.
I would tell you that I used to have a great regard for the veracity of the so-called peer-reviewed medical literature, mm-hmm. but today nothing you read in the psychiatric peer-reviewed literature is believable. The departments of psychiatry in every medical school in the country are bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry.
Very, very disturbing. So what can listeners do if they're concerned about this? Is there any action they can take?
The families of these veterans dying, these sudden cardiac deaths, mm-hmm. if they speak out, they are threatened with the loss of the deceased veteran's benefits.
Really?
Oh, yes.
So you've had people tell you that that's
yes.
going on.
No,
wow.
No question about it.
It sounds like maybe a congressional investigation is in order.
There
is
should
order.
Be, but I've been, from the very start, I've been working with Mr. Stan White. Stan White is the father of one of the Charleston Four. His son, Andrew, was at home and was on prescribed psychiatric drugs, and Stan and his wife Shirley came home one afternoon, and lo and behold, there's Andrew dead in bed during the daytime.
I can imagine the trauma.
And they accused Shirley of not monitoring his drugs.
Wow.
But they accused the wrong person, because Shirley anticipated this, and she knew to the pill. She knew what pills he had taken.
So he'd followed the doctor's orders exactly?
He followed them exactly.
Wow.
The amount of drugs being prescribed in the military by psychiatrists, Robert Nickel, 13 different drugs. He could barely stand up and
say,
it's nothing but poisoning. When there is no disease and they are being given this many drugs, not a single drug has a scientific basis.
Now, if someone is a veteran and they're listening to this, or a family of a veteran, I suppose one obvious step would be maybe see somebody outside the military and consider not taking these drugs or stepping down off them. If you're active duty military, though, does an active duty soldier have the right to refuse a medication if it's prescribed, or are they required to take this stuff?
There are lots of soldiers who say to their psychiatrist or their other treating physicians or mm-hmm. the medical officer, they say, I don't want to take that stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they are threatened with loss of benefits.
Wow.
The family is threatened with loss of benefits.
That's terrible.
It is truly criminal what's going on here. And it is all the path to this poisoning, multi-drug poisoning, is it's all done by an okay from Congress and an okay from the Senate. That's where the deal is struck. And the money, the amounts of money, I think it's between 2001 and 2011, there were over $1 billion worth of antipsychotics. And that's still going on. They're being poisoned.
So we are nearly out of time today, but listeners, if you're listening to this and you're concerned or you're outraged, It would be fair to point out that we do have two members of our local congressional delegation who are members of the House Armed Services Committee, Congresswoman Susan Davis and Congressman Duncan Hunter. And so perhaps you may want to reach out, write to them, or write to your own elected officials if you're not in their districts, and speak out on this, on your concerns on this issue.
I have been in steady contact with people in Duncan Hunter's office, and I've written follow-up notes saying, what's your response to this? And nothing but silence from Duncan Hunter's office. And he knows, I'm sure he's been on the Veterans Affairs Committee. And
He is a veteran himself, we should know.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm aware of that.
What about Susan Davis? Have you reached out to her office?
Not actually.
And what about our two senators, Dianne Feinstein? Of course, our second senator is brand new, Kamala Harris.
Yeah, for Dianne Feinstein, not to even acknowledge that she got a FedEx from me, replete with all kinds of things that I'd written.
Well, sometimes it takes a lot of voices speaking out to get the attention of folks in Washington. We're certainly seeing that, for example, with the current health care bill. We've seen town halls around the nation with a lot of angry people getting up and getting the attention of some of these officials. And so sometimes it just takes a lot of voices getting the attention, getting out in the media, as you're doing, to bring attention to these important issues. So we want to thank you for speaking out and joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
A bill in Congress, H.R. 1313, would allow your employer to order you to undergo genetic testing and share results with the company. If you refuse, you could be fined up to $1,000 or made to pay 30% more for your health insurance. The bill is called the Preserving Employer Wellness Programs Act. It purports to help employers give early notification to employees of serious genetic conditions found through DNA testing, but opponents call it an unprecedented invasion of privacy. Currently, it is illegal for an employer to discriminate against you based on your DNA under the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. You can't be fired or charge more for health insurance if you are found to be predisposed to a genetic condition. The new proposed law violates the spirit of existing protections and opens the door to workers losing jobs or being unable to afford health benefits based on a condition they may develop later in life. Another problem is that genetic tests are not always accurate, and the industry is largely unregulated, so a company could fire workers based on fear they will develop disabling conditions that are costly to treat, even if the test later turns out to be wrong. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.